What up, Jimmy Murray here with Frank Patilano, and we are the Cashflow Kings. The Cashflow Kings podcast discusses money, finance, mindset, and investing with an emphasis on cash flowing real estate.
Thanks for joining the Cashflow Kings, and welcome to our new episode, Rent to Own with Adam Zach. We are here to help you crush your goals.
So guys, a little bit of a different topic here today, but just based on the stories that we were sharing ahead of coming to the podcast, super excited for you guys to dive in and learn a little bit more about Adam's story here. So Adam, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. And anytime I can talk about real estate and cash flow, I'm all in.
100%, man. I'm with you. I feel you there. So I know that Frank just took us through the intro. We were talking about rent to own, but maybe could you share how you got started in real estate, how you caught the real estate bug, and kind of how you wound up here?
For sure. Yeah. So if there's anybody that needs an excuse, I was born to a family of eight in a town in Dickinson, North Dakota, to a population of 15,000, moved to the big city of Fargo, North Dakota, with 100,000 people, and which is like, you know, pretty much half the state of North Dakota, and just realized that, okay, for what I have and what I'm trying to do, how can I do real estate? So did the traditional, you know, go to civil engineering, do that, but my foot started tapping under the table pretty quick, which is like, am I going to do day trading? Am I going to do stocks? I can only bet so much on fantasy sports and watch, you know, my money go, you know, whatever. And I was like, okay, it seems like there's enough people that have made their millions in real estate that, hey, this is maybe worth a try. Yeah, and so the very first property was me buying it and house hacking it or renting it out by the room. You know, I graduated, had a good W-2 job. My buddies basically moved in and I didn't really know it at that point, but they were paying my mortgage. And, you know, 10 years later, you know, that same property that I just sold earlier this year is like the greatest single choice I could have made besides getting married and having kids. And no so, doubt. You know, left the engineering profession 2 years ago, retired my license. And it was just how could I get two properties a year for 10 years? Because that would eventually allow me to retire. And it was, hey, you get just a couple singles, $200 or $300 a month, do that for 10 years. So you get 10 properties, then you buy two and sell two. So that was goal of just, hey, can I just do two every year by putting $20,000 to $40,000 down? And in the Midwest, you know, where the average purchase price is maybe $200 or $250, that was doable. But I realized that you run out of cash pretty quick when you're putting 20% down. So it's like, okay, how do I juice the ROI, which kind of, you know, led me into the rent to own of collecting a down payment from tenant buyers, putting less than 20% down, using some seller credit tricks. And then that's what's really catapulted, you know, to what we exclusively do now, which is only selling on rent to own.
So let's hear a little bit more about that. But I think one point that I want to make is you start out and you're talking about just hitting, like I grew up playing baseball, right? So you're talking about hitting singles here. Everybody watches Instagram and they want to smash home runs. But I learned from my good friend, Frank Patilano over here, real estate is the best get rich slow scheme he's ever found. And I agree, right? And it sounds like that's kind of where you started. But now this rent to own scenario that you talk about, like what does a typical deal look like? Can you share numbers and structure and what somebody would need to execute that successfully?
Sure. And it varies a little bit. So I would never compare someone's chapter 10 to your chapter one. And so I'm going to go back to maybe chapter one. If someone's looking at a normal traditional rental, you could buy a $250,000 home, hope it rents out for $2,000 a month, and probably cash flow, maybe $100 a month, depending on what you put in for vacancy, CapEx, and property management if you self-manage, which is probably the typical deal that we see here as, you know, we don't quite get the 1% rule on a single family home at a $250,000 price point. In California, it gets even worse. And you go further to, you know, New York, it gets even worse where they're playing more of the appreciation game. But in the Midwest, if you can generally hit the 1% rule, it's like, okay, it's, you know, that's still kind of the general ballpark. So it's like, I couldn't find any cash flowing deals at a 5, 6, or 7% interest rate that just make the numbers work from a rental perspective. And so the idea with the rent to own is instead of getting $2,000 a month, you collect in rent, you get $2,500 a month in rent, and you give them $500 back as a credit when they buy the home from you. And so the idea is they sell sign the normal lease agreement, but then agreement number two that I would sell with the person who wants to move in is they have the exclusive option to buy the home anytime in the next 3 years at an agreed upon price, just call it 5% appreciation per year. So after the first year, they can buy it back at 262, 500, then maybe 275, then maybe 285. And so the idea was, hey, if I had a planned exit that I didn't pay real estate commissions, I got my 4 or 5% appreciation along with my debt pay down, and I could get a higher market rent in case they didn't buy. You know, I got that extra $500 a month, so I was actually cash flowing positive. That was kind of the first step, which was we found someone that couldn't get a bank loan, and they said, can you pick a house listed for sale? You buy it, use your engineering, you know, basically platinum card that had a W-2 job. So the bank just gives anybody with a W-2, you know, whatever, you know, loans that they want because your debt to income looks good. They see engineering as safe. And so they came into me and said, hey, can you just go buy this home? I'll rent it for you. Whatever your PITI is, I'll give you that plus $300. And then I'm going to buy this home once I get 2 years of tax history, because they were self-employed at the time doing, you know, adult foster care. They did that. Bought back the home, and it was like, I like this way more than, you know, just trying to find a deal. So now, instead of finding a deal, I'll talk to real estate agents and loan officers and say, hey, do you have anyone who can't quite get a mortgage but can in like 1 to 3 years?
That's brilliant.
Adam, what state are you in?
I am in North Dakota, and we have bought 75 homes using this model across 20 states. Mostly North Dakota is kind of the stretch. Midwest to Southeast.
So where do you find it? So like, you dial the phone book for mortgage brokers, or is it like you help one mortgage broker, they tell their friend, that friend calls you and keep going from there? Like, how does that look?
Yeah. So that's the word of mouth referral. And that's how we got started. But then I ran into the, I can only talk to so many. And like, I was like, Okay, what's the new marketing thing? We latched on to Google Ads, and there's 125,000 people every month searching rent to own homes into Google. And so all we're doing is we're tapping into that using, you know, a little bit of lead gen, a website saying, hey, can you not get a loan because of credit score, debt to income ratio, self-employed, all these reasons. And then we've gotten a lot more selective as we've gone, where individuals, it used to be, hey, if you had anything more than first month's deposit, it was a win for us. Like, if you had 10 grand down, I was singing all the rooftops, right? Are you kidding me? A rental and someone's giving me 10 grand down instead of, you know, 2,500 plus first month security. I'm basically getting 5 months of rent up front, to the point where we're getting $100,000 option fees now on a home that we closed, you know, last week, which is significantly different in our risk model and what we're doing now. But just for someone starting out, it's riskier to buy a home for someone who can't get a bank loan for some reason, right? The bank needs to be right 99% of the time.
So let's talk a little bit more about option price.
Sure.
Like, how do you determine option price on these style of deals?
So in a big sense, with really large companies that do this, like Divvy Homes or Home Partners of America, the short answer is you can do whatever you want. But in general, if you wanted to be, call it as transparent as you can, say I'm buying the house for $250,000. I'm going to bake in 5 to 10 grand of closing costs, and then I'm going to add 5% appreciation per year for the next 3 years. Very transparent of like, hey, my baseline price is 260 times 5% every year. And that's what you get to buy it back from me at. And assuming it does or doesn't appraise, that's a whole nother discussion. But in general, that's what you can do. There's some people who buy it for 250, put an option price of 350. Is it going to appraise out? Probably not. And so there's a lot of, I'll call it, bad actors in the rent to own space, where really all they're trying to do is grab the option fee, get higher rent, kick them out, and go do it again. And that's what we are specifically not trying to do. We want every person that comes into our program to actually buy the home, not just take the cash now, turn it over every year, collect the 10 grand. To be honest, it's a very financially incentivizing, right? If you get 10 to 20 grand down every year and then just keep doing that, you really pile up some cash.
So is that how you run your option prices? Is it every year? Or is it like, hey, we just have that one front and then our buyout goes up? Does your rent go up?
So again, you could do the same thing. So you could do year one, it's this rent, this option. Year two, it's this rent, this option price. Year three, all the way up for, you know, 5 years, 10 years, however you wanted to structure it, with this, which is generally like, hey, maybe 4% rent increase, maybe a 5% appreciation, you know, play. In general, with ours, we do two increases. We do one at the 18 month and one at the 30, or sorry, excuse me, between 0 and 18 months, it's one price. And between 18 and 36 months, it's another price, which is in general about 5% per year.
Got it.
And then we have a fixed rent amount.
So rent stays the same.
Yep.
And then your option price goes up 18 months and 36 months, essentially.
Yep. Because our loan, underlying loan, taxes and insurance may vary a little bit, but we have enough, you know, cash flow baked into there that we have our loan fixed for at least 5 years, because we're using commercial loans. So we know that our principal and interest isn't going to vary.
That makes sense. Okay. So what's your typical margin look like? So if you come in and your principal, interest, taxes, insurance is $1,000. what would you typically ask for a rental price and an option price?
So you're saying if the PITI was all in for $1,000 a month, I would say depending on how much I'm putting down. So in that case, maybe it's $150,000 house. Mm-hmm. In today's model, that is $2,000 a month in rent.
Okay. So like you said, those are comfortable margins right there.
And that's the cash flow play that I really wanted to go after. It's like, hey, and assuming that the tenant buyer is taking care of more repairs and maintenance and you're doing self-managing because you're acting more like a bank, where mm-hmm. as long as they're making their payment, that's pretty much all you're going after. And then a little tip on there, we make our tenant buyers up for rent guarantee insurance. So if we have to evict them, our rent guarantee policy is like the same thing as a private mortgage insurance policy.
Is that through SureVestor?
We use the guarantors and Leap Easy.
I've heard of that.
But I've not heard of, you said it was SureVestors. I'll have to look into them.
Jimmy, I've had a lot of people mention that guarantors.
Interesting. I've never heard of guarantors before. So we have SureVestor.
Okay.
And it's $40 a month per unit.
Nice.
But what they cover is like insane. Yeah, if you want to buy it, I don't particularly care for Class D rentals, but if you want to buy a Class D rental and factor this in,
about two years ago, Jimmy.
Yeah. Right. So that's super interesting. I've never heard of the guarantors.
I have a question back to the $1,500 a month and the 2000. If you're renting for 2000 a month, that's figuring in about $500 of your banking for the tenant buyer.
Sure. In this case, you know, say it's 10 or 20% of their monthly payment going back to them in the form of rent credit. So that's $200 to maybe $400 a month, okay. You know, coming back to them. But that's only if they buy. And so then that, you know, equates to somewhere between $2,000 and $5,000, you know, every year that they're kind of building up in equity in addition to whatever they're putting down.
So what percentage? So how many years have you been doing this?
We've been doing it since 2019.
Okay. So we're at the point where you've had about 5 years. What percentage of people have actually closed on that?
67% as of this last week.
Really? Nice.
So it started off at 80%, dipped to 67%, and now we have 90% on time to track with the next 40 properties. And that's the number that I probably feel the most proud of. In my realm and in rent-to-own industry, it's usually like 20 to 30%. Like it's usually extremely low. It's what we're doing, setting up with credit repair, talking to a loan officer right away and be like, okay, what is it? Using wayfinders and predictive credit score analysis to be like, hey, what do you actually need, you know, to be able to get, you know, bank eligible for this?
It's actually a brilliant strategy. I'm thinking like we had a lead come through that we've been working and it's not a flip opportunity. Like it's essentially a wholesale opportunity. It has a renter in there right now, right? But could be a good lease to own opportunity. The renters are going to leave, but we could roll somebody else in like the scenario that you're talking about. Because candidly, in our area in Rhode Island, we don't have a ton of people that want, or we don't have the inventory for rent to own. But I do feel that we have the appetite. So
we ended up first, because a lot of times it's easier to advertise a property. So what we did is we'd actually make offers upon finding a tenant buyer, what we call a tenant buyer, which is basically a rent to own.
That's
so
amazing.
Making 20 offers a week. Anybody that accepted it was just contingent upon a tenant buyer. We'd go ahead and post it on Facebook Marketplace. And if we didn't get anybody to rent it within the first 2 weeks, we just used our inspection contingency, got our earnest money back, canceled the deal. But if we did find someone, so that's where we were just making offers on $150,000 homes like crazy, because then we go and advertise it for free on book if we could get them to pull it off of Zillow. That gave us even more leads. So basically, before I got through inspection, I had someone who was willing to put down X amount for a down payment and a signed lease contingent upon me buying the home.
So do you host like an open house of people coming through?
We would show it one time, like on a Saturday. We have all these rent-to-own candidates come in at the exact same time and then make our buyer's agent show the house because we were buying them virtually. If I could be there in person, you know, that would be great. But it was in addition to the sellers having to accept all these long contingencies in there, which, you know, it was basically a gamble. Hey, we have the right to cancel this at any time and get our money back. We have the right to show your house. If we could, we got them to pull it off of Zillow so we could advertise it as a rental. And we had all these different contingencies. And just like in real estate, all, you know, the worst they can do is say no. But that was one way of us to basically just market properties first, then find the people second. But now we've just pivoted to now finding that person first, saying, okay, you're pre-approved for a $300,000 home. As long as you put down 30 grand, then they just go pick a house listed for sale. And then we buy the home.
That's a wow. That's amazing. So are you finding these? So it sounds like you've built some type of SEO strategy to attract these folks.
Yep.
Are you targeting certain markets? Because I know you said North Dakota to Louisiana, but you say like, hey, listen, we know in this county in Louisiana has to sell for 150, so we'll target here for SEO.
We're getting better and better, but a lot of it's paid, a lot of it's referrals, not a
Gotcha.
ton of SEO. So it's kind of wherever Google, best, spends the budget or wherever the appetite is, depending on who's searching rent to own. But there's a lot of Illinois where maybe property taxes are higher, or
Gotcha.
it some different suburbs of cities where people can't quite get in it. But to be honest, we're just kind of leeching on to the 100,000 people searching every month, and then just screening like, hey, do you make great income, have at least 10% down, but can't get a bank loan? And then just trying to get as many people to, come through our CRM and our sales funnel as possible.
Do you use any like social media retargeting?
Not for Facebook or anything like that. We have the pixels and everything set up. So
Okay.
we're trying to figure out, it's really tough. I've tried so many different marketing. I'm like, oh, do I do billboards? Do I do podcasts? Do we do this?
Yeah,
That?
man.
Google's really hard to beat. At least in this industry, just once you can measure it, how much you can track, the cost per acquisition, figuring out what your return on ad spend is, and you can see it all the way through the funnel. And Meta's got their own stuff and LinkedIn, and we've done some different radio or shows, but it's and I'm a former engineer, so maybe I'm addicted to the analytics, but I'm like, ooh, I know
You should be.
exactly.
If you're in business and you're not looking at analytics, like you should question that, right? So I'd know you should be 100%. You got to know your numbers. In all of these scenarios, have you ever had to evict anyone that you put in one of the houses?
Evict and foreclose. So that's the reason that we do lease
Oh.
with an option to buy instead of a land contract, or some people call it a contract for deed. So a contract for deed is truly, it's a, well, I mean, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a contract for deed, right? So it's almost like a car. You don't actually get the title till you've paid off the entire loan for the vehicle, but you have equitable interest. So a contract for deed or land contract, it's filed at the county. And if you need that property back, it's a foreclosure, not an eviction. Whereas a lease with an option to buy, if someone doesn't pay, it's 30 days and you get them back, versus what we learned the hard way, 6 months on a foreclosure in North Dakota. That really kills your
Shit.
ROI if you have to
That
foreclose on
sound
someone.
honestly though, that low key sounds fast. You say foreclosure in 6 months, and I'm like, whoa, that's fast, but sucks, right?
Yep. And so we've had to evict, probably three or four individuals. Either they stopped paying, two, they just left. Three, they either had a divorce. Four, we've had someone pass away, and it's like, okay, unfortunate circumstances. Who's taking it over? They just said it's not really eviction when they just, say, hey, take the house back, or different things. But that's the process. Yes, of if
Well, I think
someone
that's
doesn't
like the
pay.
slippery part, right? People are like, well, if you did all your homework up front, it should be a zero-sum game. And it's like, no, this is real estate. A bunch of crazy stuff happens, like literally every day. And
Yep.
particularly the volume you're playing at, like it's gonna happen. But it sounds like you guys have it pretty well handled with the rent to own option, right? Because it's an option you don't have to foreclose. Is that essentially the gist of it?
That's right. And so the option doesn't get filed at the county. And so if I'm a buyer, I want to buy on a land contract. If I'm selling, I want to sell on a lease option contract. Not only that, but it's taxed better. If you buy it, selling on a lease with an option to buy, if you go after 1 year, you're no longer after capital gains, versus it's the installment sale. If you do
Got
contract
it.
for deed, so you get taxed differently on what you're trying to do. So you get to depreciate it if you sell it on a lease with an option to buy. Was on an installment sale or a land contract, you have to do some funky math because it's truly amortized over a set interest rate.
Got you.
Adam, how many homes did you do last year?
We bought, I guess in 2022, we bought 27, and then last year we bought 15. And now on this year, we're hoping to do 36. And we're doing a couple different things. So one, it used to be phase one was just us buying everything. Phase two was us buying half of them, but then pairing them up with outside real estate investors, because we had so many deals that I was just finding engineering buddies and be like, hey, I'll find the tenant, I'll find the home, and I'll assign the contract for you. Just give me a pre-approval letter, and then we'll take like a 10 or 20 grand assignment fee. And it was like, cool. So now we changed it into a rental wealth to now more of a business. So now what we're doing more so is connecting investors with tenant buyers. And my grand vision is to have a March Madness style matchmaking platform where you get investors that are just like, you know what I want? 12% cash on cash on a home over 250,000 with a tenant buyer that's got a 660 credit score and is willing to pay X amount in rent. And I'd be like, sweet. You just fill up both sides of it, and it's almost like a private
That's gonna be
matchmaking
dangerous.
type platform. And using tech right now, we're using a lot of telephone and kind of plug and play, But I love the idea of being able to kind of be a deal accelerator for investors where they get to kind of pick and choose what they want from a cash flow, and then having the tenant buyers be like, hey, if you, and that's all we're doing is like, a lot of people should just rent, pay off their mortgage or pay off their debts and get a mortgage. Like that's what we advocate on our podcast. We're targeting the tenant buyers. Like a lot of times it makes sense is just fix your financial house or get 2 years of taxes and just wait. But there's some unique people that we actually bought a home for a loan officer. He makes $75K a year and he's a loan officer at US Bank, but he happens to work for the Air Force and he does adult foster care. So he's making like 200 grand from that and 75 from this. And the bank says, no, we can't count any of this income. And me as an investor, I'm like, what would it need? He's like, oh, do you mind if I put down 15%? And I was not mind at all. And plus for as an investor, it's a calculated return, right? If he's going to put down $45,000 on a $300,000 house, I almost can't lose money on it. And so at that point, it's like, okay, what spread do you want? But I love this idea of what if he did that and you had 20 investors competing it for him? Maybe this individual then could kind of price shop, and that way we can have a little bit of capitalism and play kind of the price to the ratio. So that's what we're currently in the mode of, is trying to scale that from a technology standpoint.
Yeah, man. I mean, my two questions here, I'm curious if maybe we could link two things in the show notes if you're open to it, because it's really the sauce that you're sharing. But one would be like the contingencies that you list in a contract. And then I forgot what the second one is. Sorry, I was spacing. I was trying to tee that up correctly. But I'm just trying to think of like, oh, maybe the model. Is there like a spreadsheet that you use to calculate these things?
Sure. Yeah. If you go to homeequitypartner.com/investors, there's multiple lease option agreements that our attorneys have reviewed that you can get it for free. We do a flow through on kind of like how our process works. And then the short story on the contingencies is, well, that's what I love. You can put almost anything you want in a contingency. But
I love my buyers. What can I put in the contract? I'm like, anything. It doesn't mean it's going to be accepted, but you can put anything in there.
So one of the favorite ones was contingent upon a successfully signed lease, which is kind of like a weasel out clause, right? It's just contingent upon a successfully signed lease. And whether you do it or not is like, you know, completely up to you.
Right.
And, or the other one is having, if you fail to close on the home, having liquidated damages be capped at whatever the earnest money is, just to make sure. Cause we've had a situation, we're trying to buy someone a house. Everything's all lined up and the tenant buyer's like, just kidding. I don't want the house. I'm like, oh, we're under contract to close. And the sellers are like, why aren't you closing? We're like, oh, we don't have our inspection contingency. We don't have our, you know, financing contingency because we actually can close. And so then like we pull out the contingent upon a successfully signed lease. And they're like, I don't know how much that one holds for different things. So what we did is we just made sure that we capped it to make sure that like someone can't force you to close on a house or pay the, you know, the large money. So those are probably the two biggest ones.
So what was the website again? One more time for those listening in.
Yeah, it's homeequitypartner.com/investors.
homeequitypartner.com/investors. So guys, you definitely want to go check that out.
What is the biggest struggle in your business right now? What's your biggest challenge?
So we have a pendulum swing between deals and investors. So we're always trying to match like, hey, what do investors want? We hear that and then we go find the people. And then we have a bunch of people and then we don't have the investors. Like maybe interest rates are changing or different things. Last year, we couldn't find enough investors because we had so many, or 2 years ago, we had so many tenant buyers. Now it's switched back to finding the tenant buyers again during this season. So right now the struggle is we have an awesome team. We get people that love working for us. And so right now it's just finding more of the tenant buyers, which is kind of a fun one where you just get to ramp up Google ad marketing and a few other things, but that's the biggest in the business right now.
Love it. This is incredible. You got the wheels turning, man. I love this. It's just a completely different way. And clearly you're successful with it because you get the numbers, you get the track record. Now it's just a matter of scaling the thing, which that's a very fortunate circumstance to be in, but it sounds like you got it locked in.
Sure.
You want the best property management company in Rhode Island, go to Lion Property Management. Oh, there we go. LionPropertyGroup.com.
In Eastern Connecticut now.
Ooh.
That's where we're rolling out.
Dayville?
No, we're trying to go New London County. So focus on electric boat, the Navy, the two casinos, and the hospitals.
There you go. Your website's awesome. I'm still reeling about the contingency in there. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I just... we're obviously in different markets, and I'm just thinking like in Rhode Island we're about 30,000 housing units short, so it's tough to buy with those kind of contingencies. A lot of people are waiving inspections waiving finance contingencies, you know, so stuff like that. But no, it's awesome for the right market.
Yeah, and I would say this definitely helps in more of a buyer's market. But I say, depending on, you know, if it's shortage and it's being super competitive, if you do a cash offer, and if by chance you happen to have the tenant buyer already lined up, yep. A lot of times we say, hey, we're in this together. How much earnest money do you want to do? If I'm bringing all cash, you put up the earnest money so that if for some reason we don't close, the risk is on them. Like if they don't bring the rest of the option fee or different things, take care of all or get rid of all the contingencies, make it a cash offer, no inspection, all that different things. I still recommend, because I want every homeowner into the home, whether or not it's contingent upon it. We make everybody that we're buying a home for get inspection, because the last thing we want is foundations or HVAC or something, because we're seeing them as the new homeowner. And if they're like, oh yeah, I moved into the home, I brought 20 grand, but then all of a sudden I need a furnace or the roof needs replaced, like we don't want that as well. And so we've done that where we've removed the contingency. We just want to make sure that us or our investors are protected by either not putting up the earnest money ourselves, sharing it with the tenant buyer, or having some sort of mutually agreed upon relationship.
No doubt.
So the first loan you get on this property, it's a commercial loan. It's through you guys, your investor.
So we don't do any loans and we don't take any first positions. So Home Equity Partner is essentially just, I'll call it a wholesaler of MLS listed properties. We're finding a tenant, getting the home under contract, then assigning it. But whoever the outside investor is, maybe it's a fund, maybe it's a doctor in California. The doctor in California either buy home all cash or going to Wells Fargo, getting his own 80% loan to value debt financing. And then Dr. Strange is taking title with his Wells Fargo bank as first position mortgage.
Yeah. But going with that, on the first couple, were you the investor or not?
Yep. We were the investor. And then we just went to a local credit union, got the first position mortgage. Yep.
Are you still doing any of that or none at all?
We will close on any deal that any investor doesn't want. And so this last year we bought 3 and then, you know, assigned 15. The year before that, I think we bought 12. So we're slowly winding down how many we own, because we have a large portfolio, and now turning it more into a business and connecting it with investors. But we also created a fund that specifically all they do is buy rent to own. And so we're general partners in that,
ask, because I think that's the easiest play. So if it's the fund that kind of funds the prime of the first mortgage, essentially, to make this game a lot easier.
Yep. You can do a lot more on scale. So yeah, we're launching our second fund here, probably in the next, or I guess if this is the end of January, probably by March, we'll have our second fund listed. We did the first fund, oversubscribed it, you know, just did a small, like raise a million, just make sure that we can make everything work. You
know, buy all 4.
Yep.
Yeah. Nice. Love it. Love it. I think it's absolutely brilliant.
All right, let's have a couple questions. First question is, if someone wants to become a better investor, what would you recommend?
I would say fail 100 times.
Love
and,
that.
And yeah. That is a little bit counterintuitive, but if someone's like, hey, how do I get into real estate investing? I say, get me at least one rejection within the next 5 days. And it's surprising how hard people can, like, get me a rejected offer. They're like, oh, that means I got to find a loan officer. I got to find a number. I got to offer low enough for someone to say no. They have to run their numbers and like know what that is. And so my thought was like, if I could just give someone permission to get rejected, a lot of times, a lot of that fear goes away, because they're like, oh, I don't want to do this, 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 and this. And so for me, a lot of just it's failing extremely fast and realizing that, hey, you know, lose $10,000 on a deal, that it's basically like a master's in real estate investing. You're never, yeah, ever going to figure that out again. It's way better than an MBA.
Love education. It.
Yeah.
100%.
All right. Next question is, what is one book that you would consider a must read?
I stumbled across this gem called The Road Less Stupid by Keith Cunningham. And if you're a business owner, that book is phenomenal at asking some really strategic questions. The Road Less Stupid. He was kind of the equivalent of Rich Dad, Poor Dad's Rich Dad.
Love it. It was a solid. I've read that book before. And as you can
see, phenomenal.
I got some books around here, so books in front of me too. But
and then I'll shamelessly plug Alex Hormozzi's Kick. I'm such a big fan of crafting and get leads and all the value that he puts into stuff. It's phenomenal. He's worth a follow.
Yeah, man, absolutely.
Adam, next question: what do you want to be when you grow up? Which means 5 or 10 years down the road, where do you see you and your business?
So I would say I want to be my wife's best friend and my kid's superhero. And then everything else comes after that, because once I do that, business gets a lot easier. By default, Adam wakes up and I love business. So I have to put systems in place to realize that I had a former boss who grew an engineering company from 2 people to 50, lost his wife and his kids during the whole process. And that's like, to me, the ultimate failure. And so realizing, I got a big poster up here. It says your health and relationships will determine the majority of your happiness here on earth. And so for me, on what I want to be when I grow up, is make sure that my love of real estate, and if my wife told me to give this up, I'd be super sad. I would do it because I live and breathe, and you know, I'm helping investors make money. And for myself personally, allowed my wife to quit her job, me quit my job. But for me, that comes first. And then after that, I feel like I'm uniquely called to help people get into homes. And so my motto and the mission that I live through is leverage real estate to appreciate lives.
Man, you've got to, I'm going to give it to you. I think we're 75 podcasts deep. You have the best responses to those three questions that I have heard. Sincerely. Like, that was completely unexpected and incredibly valued. So I appreciate you for that.
Mm-hmm. Much appreciated. Thank you.
So you guys have heard Adam's website, which I'll say it one more time, is homeequitypartner.com. So check that out. Adam, if there was a way to reach out to you, is it best through the website or the social they can follow? What's the best way?
Yep. The website would be the best. We're still and getting on our investor list, and we're giving up content the best way. I would say, to our dismay, we're not as active on social media and different things. And personally, I've just chosen, hey, that's the best way. So if you're able to, you know, click on the link, drop an email, get some free option agreements, and you never want to hear from us again, that's perfectly fine. Otherwise, there's some links on LinkedIn profile or Facebook that I'm probably the most next active on.
Good stuff, man. Good stuff. You guys heard it here. Got him out on his website, homeequitypartner.com. Tons of free stuff out there. Sign up for their mailing list. We hope that you guys enjoyed this episode of the Cashflow Kings podcast. In between podcasts, check out our daily content on Instagram under the handle The Cashflow Kings. Cheers to your success.
The Cashflow Kings podcast is for basic entertainment purposes only. We do not give official legal, tax, or investment advice.